Thank you. Yeah, it did sound like a public address announcer, didn't it? Everybody hear me all right?
No.
Well, tough. Okay. The Houston Astrodome, as you all know, I'm sure, opened in 1965 to rave reviews from most fans, writers, and players. Among all the glitzy trappings, the players believed that the game itself would improve. It was a constant 72 degrees, there was no wind, there were no shadows, and the grass, grown on a local ranch and transported to the dome, was spectacular. The grass was bathed in sunlight because of 4,600 lucite skylights overhead, and it was believed that maintaining the grass in such conditions would be easier than ever before. But during a series of preseason intra-squad games and exhibition games, numerous fly balls were lost in the glare of the sunlight shining through the glass panels. In the few days prior to the season opener, the roof was painted off-white. The grass slowly began to die. The Astros played the last few weeks of the 1965 season on spray-painted dirt. Judge Roy Hofhines, the team owner and the force behind the building, announced early in that season that the team would have synthetic grass in 1966, something that no one had ever heard of. Monsanto had put chem grass on a high school field in Rhode Island, and Hofhines worked with the company to get it ready for the Astrodome. By the home opener, there was actually not enough for the entire Astrodome. It was just the infield, but the outfield grass got the surface in midsummer. Once again, the surface was popular with the players. No divots, no bad hops, a perfectly fair surface. The Astros and the Dodgers played a few exhibition games on the new field in March, and the infielders mostly complained about the dirt in the base paths. Wes Parker, speaking for many, said, "Frankly, I wish they'd invent some synthetic dirt." Throughout the late 1960s, many journalists were predicting and advocating the installation of artificial turf on all playing fields. The Sporting News favored the surfaces, at least for football or multi-purpose fields. What many of us now think of as a boom in the new construction of baseball stadiums in this period was really a boom in multi-purpose stadiums or football fields. The stadiums that opened, football was the primary motivating factor in almost all of the construction that was going on. It was a much more popular, hip sport at that time. The stadiums that opened in the late 60s, in Atlanta, in St. Louis, and Oakland, did not install fake grass because the surface had not been invented when they were playing the stadiums. It had now been invented. By the end of the decade, many college football fields had converted to turf, including in Alabama and Arkansas, big name programs, all the big schools in the Pacific Northwest. The AFL Oilers moved to the Astrodome in 1968, and the first NFL team was the Philadelphia Eagles, who put it in Franklin Field in 1969. The first big national showcase for artificial turf was the 1968 All-Star Game, billed as Monsanto meets Ron Santo. Being as this was 1968 and the Astrodome, the game ended 1-0 appropriately, and the OD run scored on a double play. There was also a significant injury in the game when Harmon Killebrew tore his hamstring stretching for a ball at first base. Within a few years, stories commonly referred to Killebrew slipping on the AstroTurf, but as you can see, that did not happen. He slipped on dirt. The Killebrew injury was not the biggest sports injury in 1968. That was Gale Sayers. Gale Sayers was the greatest player in football at that time, I think by acclamation. He tore up his left knee when he was hit by the 49ers' Kermit Alexander. The game did not take place on AstroTurf, of course. It took place on a very muddy Wrigley Field in Chicago. In response, Phil Wrigley told Jerome Holtzman in the Sporting News that he would soon be installing artificial turf at Wrigley Field, likely within a few years. In their conversation, there was an overriding understanding that it was better for the players, that the change was inevitable everywhere. This was not a controversial statement. This is a man, it must be said, that would never install lights at his ballpark. Wrigley Field did not get artificial turf, of course, sadly. The next park to put in a fake surface was a few miles to the south. White Sox Park, as it was then known, put in a fake surface on the infield only, as you can see here. And the players, again, seem to like it. Here is a story written, or largely due to Louis Aparicio. The story looks like a regular story, but is actually an ad from Monsanto. The company ran ads like this in every issue for several years, and occasionally had multi-page inserts filled with stories, making it look just like the regular newspaper. Here's one where they talk about the fact that there'll no more wet grounds because of how easy it was to drain. Reduces injuries. You could buy some AstroTurf. I don't know if anybody ever did that. This last one was credited to Vince Lombardi, who was then the coach of the Washington Redskins. He wanted turf installed at RFK Stadium, but Bob Short, who owned the Senators, would not go along. In fact, 2 years later, when the Senators moved to Texas, Short insisted that turf not be installed at Arlington Stadium, which had been the plan. If you dislike artificial turf, Bob Short is your hero. He was somewhat of a lone voice during this revolution. Still, there were four more baseball teams that joined the club in 1970. Candlestick Park joined up in early 1970, at the beginning of the season, largely in preparation for the 49ers' move from Kezar Stadium. This photo shows the original turf with the dirt base paths. In July, Willie Mays got his 3,000th hit on this surface. The Cardinals joined up a few days later, installing turf in their four-year-old park. Riverfront Stadium opened in late June, just a couple of weeks before it hosted the All-Star Game. It was the first Major League Stadium with turf in the base paths, using dirt cutouts around the bases. Within a few years, all the turf parks switched over to use the cutouts. A few weeks after Riverfront, Pittsburgh opened Three River Stadium, which was tartan turf made by 3M, the first AstroTurf competitor. A few months later, the Reds and Pirates met in the playoffs. The first postseason games ever held on turf. The next all-grass postseason would be in 1988, 18 years later. Here's Three Rivers, as you probably remember it, after they switched over to the turf infield. And Candlestick, same thing. Philadelphia got its stadium in 1971, a year behind the original schedule. The makers of synthetic surfaces made inroads in other areas besides baseball and football. Welcome mats, field houses, tennis courts, playgrounds, lawns, patios, golf greens, golf tees around swimming pools, even the Brady Bunch's backyard. If you are keeping score, that is Peter, the southpaw on the mound, Greg behind the dish, Bobby is the batter. Nice form. And Cindy is recreating the role of a 19th century public address announcer. Marcia, of course, was studying. Though the fake grass in the background provides the excuse I need to show this wonderful picture. Moving along. Royal Stadium opened its gates in 1973. Unlike most of the other parks I've named and the parks to come, this was a baseball-only facility, but the trend in the game was very clear by this point. They retreat in 1976. Bill Veeck got control of the White Sox. He changed the name of the field back to Comiskey Park, and in March he hosted a party for fans who could come in and remove the turf by hand. It is interesting, I think, that the most rebellious owners, like Veeck and Charlie Finley and Bob Short, had no interest in synthetic playing surfaces, while the game's most conservative owners, who often bucked progress in the game, like Gussie Bush and Bob Housem, embraced it quickly and completely. 1977 brought three more turf fields. In Montreal, another one that was several years late, I believe. My personal favorite in Seattle, and in Toronto. I chose this photo to show the challenge of fitting a Canadian football field, which is 30 yards longer and 12 yards wider, into a baseball park. The removable right field fence would sit at about the 40-yard line in this picture. A well-struck home run to right field would bounce and roll for a long time before reaching the opposite end zone. There were seats in right center field that were more than 800 feet from home plate. The Metrodome, a fine football stadium, came along in 1982. And Sky Dome in 1989. At its opening, Sky Dome was a sensation on par with the Astrodome a generation earlier. Sports Illustrated called it a breathtaking arena and a surprisingly intimate baseball park. The team set attendance records, soon had the best team in baseball, and everyone wondered how teams in the AL East in their old parks were ever going to be able to compete with the Blue Jays. St. Petersburg, Florida built a dome to try to attract a major league team at about the same time as Toronto did, but they missed out on the White Sox, they missed out on the Giants, they missed out on the Mariners, and then were not selected for the 1993 expansion as expected. Instead, they hosted arena football and hockey for several years. By the time the Rays debuted in 1998, the park was already a dinosaur. A key element in the death of this trend was the opening of Oriole Park in 1992. It was as if everyone suddenly remembered, oh right, this is what we want a park to look like. Not only did teams suddenly want their own Camden Yards, but they needed their own Camden Yards. They could not compete in the old cookie cutters anymore. Minnesota, a two-time World Series champion a few years later, and also a league attendance leader regularly, or among the leaders, soon was volunteering to be contracted. Seattle was playing in a 15-year-old dump. In 1992, Riverfront Stadium was just 22 years old, about the same age as Camden Yards is today, and it celebrated three World Series champions, but the Reds were suddenly a small market team almost overnight, along with all of their synthetic colleagues. The Red Sox, who had tried and failed to get a cookie cutter built in the 1960s, now doubled their efforts to get the next Camden Yards. This too would fail. Since Camden Yards, 22 new parks have opened, and no one, at least out loud, would have suggested that they use a synthetic surface. This slide shows the percentage of major league games that took place on artificial turf through the years, beginning in 1960, just to show the zero line. The number was over 30% for about 30 years, reaching a high of 38% for much of that period. But as an historian, as many of you are, I know that this graph undersells the impact of the phenomenon. Although the peak was 38%, we know that the best teams, many of the best players, and the best games were being played on synthetic fields. Let's look more closely at this, the 24-year period that I would call the age of turf. Although just over one-third of the games were on turf in this period, if you tuned into a big important game, your odds were much higher. Almost every postseason, with the exception of 1988, included postseason, back when there were four teams. 15 of the 24 World Series included turf by at least one of the teams, and four times both of the teams. And 12, half of the World Series champions, were on artificial turf, and many of the most famous and interesting teams of this period had artificial turf. Three Hall of Fame players, all of which you know off the top of your head, played every home game of their careers on artificial turf. Mike Schmidt, Kirby Puckett, and George Brett. Many others played most of their home games on turf in their career. If you're a fan of certain teams, your best memories are likely of teams that played on turf. Let's take a look at the Kansas City Royals. Remarkably, they've had almost the same number of games on the two surfaces over the years as a home team. I believe that the grass is going to catch up in the next week or two. The grass teams have had no postseasons, a 431 winning percentage, and very little home field advantage. The 22 turf teams, on the other hand, got to the postseason seven times, had a huge postseason advantage, and an overall winning percentage of 528, and of course, won the World Series. If you're a fan of certain teams, your best memories, I said that already. If you're a fan of the Pirates or Reds, many of your team's most famous moments, the Big Red Machine, the Nasty Boys, the Clemente's 1971 World Series, We Are Family, they were all on turf. I'm not arguing, of course, cause and effects. I'm saying that a lot of wonderful things happen on these fields, and many of the best baseball memories of the people in this room took place on fake grass. So where are we now? Well, artificial turf is not going away. Let's look at this graph again, only this time I have added a line for pro football, which was a very large factor in the start of the story. Football was over 50% for a generation, and then fell at about the same time baseball did, and for many of the same reasons. Some of it was because they were using the same fields, but some of it was because of injuries as well. But the new technologies, like field turf and other more realistic synthetics, caused many teams to switch back, or to put it in their new facilities. Artificial turf is very widely used in high school, colleges, city parks, is growing in pro football, is making inroads slowly into European soccer. It is used in most fields in the Japanese major leagues. But it is dying, there's no question, in Major League Baseball in North America, and is nearly dead in the minor leagues. The baseball fans and the writers of the 1960s sort of accepted change as their fate, or our fate. People were walking on the moon. Baseball players were playing on new and improved grass. It was progress, better living through chemistry. It took a few years before everyone realized that turf was not really better than grass. It did not look like grass, for one thing. It did not play like grass. And the players thought it was much harder on their knees and feet. But the turf today is much different. The games in Toronto and St. Petersburg, other than the roofs, do not seem to play any differently than in any other games. There are no turf hits. The field seems to be the correct color, which it didn't used to be the case. But the public is no longer interested in progress. They want retro ballparks, old-fashioned scoreboards, and grass. So we will not go back, but I would not bet against the improvements in the surfaces someday making inroads. Finally, the game played on these fields was often wonderful. If you want a game where a premium is placed on speed, on both defense and offense, where your middle infielders are selected for quickness and range rather than the ability to hit 15 home runs, this is a great time to be a baseball fan. Thank you very much.
We'll now open it up for questions for Mark. Front row.
Were there any other tartan turf fields besides before the Pirates played?
I don't believe so. For baseball, I don't believe so. Okay, the question was whether there were any other fields that used tartan turf, the 3M product, and I don't believe there were. By the 80s, I believe there were other companies that started to get involved, and of course today the what we call the old AstroTurf is no longer exists, although there is a product called AstroTurf made by a different company. But for most of my childhood, AstroTurf was sort of a generic term that people used.
With baseball decreasing, and we saw that football was decreasing, in light of all the injuries, football still is increasing. Could that be because of the tendency towards domes in the cold weather areas, and even in the southern regions they have some domes as well?
I think, did you hear the question? He was just asking about why football was going up and baseball was going down at the same period in the last few years. There's probably a number of reasons, but I think the biggest factor is likely the overriding traditionalist sense in baseball that doesn't really exist in football. I think in football it's largely a question of money, and I think the fans don't really care that much about the fields. The players still do. The players still think it's harder and they get hurt, even on the newer surfaces. But I think in baseball, there's no equivalent to the outrage, nor was there ever, among fans about turf in football.
It's a lot of injuries in football, especially for concussions. When do you think there'd be some kind of player union outrage about this continuing on?
Yeah, I don't have an answer for that.
He
asked about whether there should be more player union outrage.
Is there more?
Play around in football. Of course, football is sort of outside my comfort zone a little bit. But I would say that there is occasionally outrage in football, but I don't think the football union has the same kind of power that the baseball union has, for one thing. Claudia.
Usually football, you know,
football is one of the reasons we've seen more use of artificial surfaces. There's lower maintenance costs for a shorter season. Much easier to get snow off of. But there are significant instances where the condition of football turf has had an impact on the game. I cite a game between the Philadelphia Eagles and Baltimore Ravens, which was being filmed for an HBO series a few seasons ago, where the rug on Franklin Field started to buckle and ripple in the heat, and that the NFL deemed the field unplayable for an exhibition game, because that was one of the worst artificial surfaces in the league. And so that was a case where, in football turf, an issue with artificial turf being used, but that's one of the few instances where that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any sense of how many money is or isn't saved on AstroTurf versus grass, like other studies like that?
He asked about the money saved. I think I don't know the amount, but I know that it's considerable, which is why universities, for the most part, it's a very easy decision for universities to make. My university in Oregon State, artificial football, artificial baseball, artificial soccer, all the practice fields are artificial, and it's all money. Yes?
I was in college in 1970, and I was in marching band, and we marched in Bush Stadium on the AstroTurf, and it didn't rain. The water was very deep, and it was very different to march in than a regular field.
And also, a point I could have made and didn't, is that the heats that these fields had was somewhat incredible, like 150 degrees, literally, on the field of these stadiums. And that isn't true anymore. I mean, they really have made a lot of progress. I often wonder if the Astrodome had field turf and the whole generation had come along with what we have today, perhaps the backlash wouldn't have happened. David.
Ability of it to drain, so people count, you know, teams that drew from long distances away, people know they're the game play.
Sure.
So I think part of what Camden Yards helped with too is they had a really great drainage. And so you can play a game after it rained on the grass fields.
Right. In fact, the Royals, when they took the artificial turf out, which they did in 1993 or 1994, one of the reasons they said they were doing this publicly was that their old rule about it no longer applied once the Rockies came, because they no longer had as large of a region to draw from, and therefore they weren't nearly as concerned about people coming from long distances. I don't know if that's true, but that's what they said. Yeah?
I noticed in some of the minor league stadiums that use the turf today, they have the warning track painted a different color. Is there a different texture, or is it just a gimmick that's painted a different color?
I don't know, but I can say that on our baseball field at Oregon State, which is artificial turf, they have the baselines are brown, and the warning track is brown. All the places you expect to be brown are brown, but it's still artificial turf. It's just a different color. So the whole thing, except for the mound, which is a rule, I believe.
If you're not looking down,
yeah, I don't.
Right.
Yeah.
Michael. Oh, no, Chris, sorry.
Okay, you mentioned at the beginning of your talk that when you came up with turf, there were advertising about this is healthier, less injury prone. What was the kind of turning point with the where the conventional woods became more injury than turf?
There were a number of studies done in the 70s which were done for football, because football was more important, I think, for especially at the college level. And there were a lot of studies in football, and early on these studies were done by Monsanto. And surprisingly, they all said that there were less injuries on turf. And then, in the early 70s, and my knowledge of this area is a little fuzzy, but in the early 1970s, I believe the Players Union in the NFL did a study and made a pretty big stink about the fact that there were more injuries. In baseball, it was largely anecdotal, I believe. I mean, there were baseball players that said, I mean, Andre Dawson was very famous, saying, I will not ever play on this turf again.
Last question.
Mom, did you come to Toronto with us?
was brought up.
Yes.
Does the maple have breakfast every night at the stadium?
Yes.
In other words, you could say you have breakfast at everything you know that?
Yes.
So just like our sitting there having breakfast, and we're looking out to the window at the field that's now being prepared for the game. And lo and behold, all of a sudden the mound came out of the ground, came below on a hydraulic lift.
Right.
I guess we have to do that for concerts. I was wondering, one, is are all the astroturf fields built that way where the mound disappears and comes to them? They had a full complement of groundskeepers. There's not much to do except take care of the mound.
Well, so of the two fields that are left, the one in St. Pete is a baseball field. They don't use it for anything else, for the most part. I mean, there are special events. I think we may have a bowl game there. But Toronto still is a football field, and they still use it for other purposes, and it's still concrete underneath. So, yes, the mound has to appear that way. I assume not, but I don't know. I don't know. I probably not. Right.
Well, we are out of time. So